Welcome to the greatest men's club in the world. It's not a country club, it's a grilling club, where every weekend they're going to talk about taking an animal and throwing it on some scorching flames and turning it into the tastiest morsels of goodness on this earth. As a matter of fact, it's kind of caveman, but they don't drag women into their cave. No, they're going to teach you how to make that food so good you can lure them into your cave and keep her hair looking good. When you want to find the center of the barbecue universe, just look at a map of North America and look for that big grilling mitt. That's where we're at. It's the Grilling Guys.
Welcome. You're listening to Grilling Guys on the Grilling Guys Talk Network. It's the Independence Day edition. Happy Saturday. It's July the 2nd, and we are dead in the middle of the summer, and we are neck deep in grilling season. I'm Jop. Barbecue Bob is off today, and I'll start the show on a little bit of a somber note, but you've heard us speak of Charlie Jabor's marinade as one of the best steak marinades we've ever had, and Charlie Jabor was Barbecue Bob's father-in-law. And Charlie, World War II veteran, one of that generation that made America great, served our country, served us in the postal system. Charlie was 92 and he passed away this week. So Barbecue Bob is out of town with the family, mourning the passing of his father-in-law, and our heartfelt wishes with them to for a little peace as they move through this change in their family. The man had over 100 grandchildren and great-grandchildren. So he's 92 wow. years old. But so joining me in the studio, we'll be going over the before I do that, we'll be going over the marinade a little later in the show, Charlie Jabor's marinade. You can find that on thegrillingguys.com and look under just search word Charlie, and it'll pop up and you'll be able to see it. It's a great marinade, and we'll get into that a little later. But now joining me in the studio in Barbecue Bob's absence, I've got Chef Bob Schultz. He's from the Secchia Institute of Culinary Education. He's an educator. He runs their restaurant, has his own seasonings, and is going to impart some pretty technical but easy-to-understand information on us. And then, of course, when Barbecue Bob's out of town, I always have to have a brewer in the right-hand chair, and we've got the baritone of beer. Chaz Thompson from Schmoes is sitting in as well. So we're going to have a good morning, and we hope you do too. Chaz just handed me the first Pickle Tink Ale, and why don't we dive right into that, Chaz? So tell us a little bit about this, because one of the things every grilling guy does is grilling is predominantly a one-handed sport because you got to hold the beer in the other, and I said, Chaz, you got to bring us some summertime ales, and here we are. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, Pickle Tink's something that the boss, Jim, came up with out of his old homebrew notebook. Something he played with years ago, and we refined it into a big batch, and we bring it out every summer. Pickle Tink is a strawberry wheat ale. Pickles were only there for the picture, okay? No pickles were injured in the making of this beer.
Okay.
And it's a very light, refreshing beer. It goes so great with light things on the grill. I love it with chicken. But yeah, I make fruit beer for guys that don't like fruit beer.
Right.
Everybody, I don't leave it sweet.
Everybody thinks it's a chick beer, and it's not, because this isn't a sweet beer. It's just got a little taste of strawberry in there.
It's strawberry, and it's the tanginess of a strawberry.
Yes, it is.
And it's light. It's refreshing. It's it's really bold. And I know Barbecue Bob, he says, it's girly beer. Well, he's gone, so we're going to drink some Pickle Tink.
Right, yeah. I take this opportunity to run the show the way I want to do it. And usually it's Barbecue Bob, and I'm just his grill bitch. But anyway, it all works out. But so Chef Schultz, Bob Schultz, welcome to the show. Glad to have you back. You've sat in the chair with us before. And what do you think of this Pickle Tink?
I do like this. It's got a nice softness finish. So when you're grilling in a nice summer beer, it's not too heavy. A couple of those. I know with my pizza oven in my backyard, probably three of these, the oven would be ready. And you fire up the grill and you kind of gauge it by how many beers to make sure the grill is nice and hot. And this is a beautiful drinking beer.
Now, Chaz, this would not categorize as a session beer, really, right? I mean, we're at 7.3% alcohol with this one.
Yeah, it's a little bit higher than that. It's a good backyard beer when you're just operating the grill.
Right, yeah.
Stay away from the power tools. The grill is fine.
Yeah, don't get behind the wheel after you've had a couple of these because they're a little bit potent. And you'll probably be able to figure that out by the end of the show as my tongue will be a little thick and we'll be yucking it up a little bit. But anyway, today I thought what we'd do, guys, is we're going to go around the meat case because this is the 4th of July. This is the quintessential grilling time right now. If you ever grill any time throughout the year, this would be the weekend to do it because it's a holiday weekend. The holiday falls on a Monday. A lot of people even have Tuesday off. So you got 3 or 4 days to perfect your craft here. And so we thought we would go around the meat case and hit a little bit of the poultry. We're going to do some beef. We're going to do some pork. And then we might even fill in with a little bit of seafood at the end. And between these two guys, they love to eat, and they're even better cooks. So we're gonna dive into a little bit of poultry, and Bob, if you're thinking summertime poultry on the grill, give us your favorite cut of chicken that you really like to put on the grill.
Definitely legs and thighs. I'm a leg kind of guy. I like it because if you leave the bone in there, you're gonna get a nice flavor from the bones. Sometimes if you just put the breast on the grill, it has a tendency to get too dry because of the inconsistency of the thickness. And so I do like the legs and thighs a lot. And
now, do you leave the skin on those or do you take the skin off?
I leave it on. I leave it on because as you're grilling, that the fat will kind of melt right in there and kind of help keep it moist. And I like that. I kind of like it if it catches a little bit on fire to give it a little crunchiness, kind of the sweet flavor of the smoke.
Okay, so for a seasoning profile, Chaz, your chicken on the grill, what do you enjoy? You like it spicier? You like it a little sweeter? And then we're going to dive into sauce in a second, too.
I do both ways. If I'm doing spicy, it's usually a rub. If I'm doing a little bit sweeter on the side, I usually go herbs. Okay. And I do that with a marinade.
All right.
And I've got my brine bucket ready to go, and I'll mix up a Wonder Brine and throw it in the bucket and throw the chicken in there with some ice, and we're good.
All right. Well, a little bit later in the show, we're going to ask Bob to talk a little bit about brines versus marinades, because a lot of guys get confused on those. You just mentioned both of them in that whole sentence about, here's how I like my chicken. Now, the other age-old question that happens is, do I put the sauce on while the meat is cooking, or do I put it on at the end? Chaz, what are you doing?
I'm at the end. At the end. I don't need the extra flare-up from the sugar that might be in the sauce, and it just usually turns out burned and crispy, and it makes a mess of the grill.
Yeah, and if you overcook that sauce, it gets a little bitter.
Correct.
Sometimes. So, Bob, you're the same opinion?
No, definitely same opinion. And Chas had a great point about seasoning and putting herbs in with the chicken. But I always peel the fat back and then season it, put the skin right back on to kind of keep that in there. Because sometimes if you season the chicken on the outside of the fat, you're going to lose some of that flavor too. So I just peel back the skin and then season it underneath. And then exactly what Chas said is kind of finish the sauce right at the end and get a nice pan-sear, it's called, a nice crust on there right
there's
at the end.
There's the first of many technical terms you're going to hear today on the
I'll
grilling,
guys.
I'll
keep it simple.
No, that's all good, man. That's why you're here, because if we hear these things, we need an explanation of what they are. So you're actually going to take the skin on the leg and the thigh and peel it back, not completely off, but just so it's still hooked on one edge. And you're going to put seasoning. Do you put it on the skin or do you actually put it on the meat?
I put it on the meat and then flip the skin back over and then kind of act as a seal, because as a protein cooks, it's going to kind of steam in an essence, because the protein is going to be underneath the fat. So it's going to steam and then it keeps that right in there.
So when you put your leg and thigh quarter on the grill, you're putting the skin side down first or the other side down first? Do you have a preference? Does it matter?
I usually start with the skin down.
Me too.
Okay.
Me too. I like it skin side down to start the fat to start rendering.
I think it takes that skin side a little bit longer to cook. So if you start it there and then flip it over and then maybe finish it back on that side, then it's cool. But anyway, so there we are. We've got a little heads up on poultry. Coming up next, we're going to go another step down the meat case, and we're going to hit a little bit of beef. Because this is my favorite part of the meat case. Beef is my favorite item on the grill, and we're going to spend some time breaking down the do's, don'ts, and the whys. So you listen to Grilling Guys on the Grilling Guys Talk Network. Stick with us. We'll be back.
Man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Hey, Uncle Sam.
Wouldn't it be sweet if life just came with an assist when you needed it? At State Farm, we live for a great assist, and that's why State Farm agent Sterling Massey is proud to be a part of the NBA, the National Bureau of Assists. Whether you're driving the lane or defending the house, when it comes to assisting you with your insurance and financial needs, Sterling and his staff make it look as easy as a behind-the-back dime dropper. Call Sterling Massey at 616-532-6071.
Hi, this is Tim Sobey. Sobey Meats is an 11-year-old business on Remembrance Drive in Walker. We have high-quality custom meats, as well as seafood, produce, beer, and wine. Sobey Meats is proud to supply the barbecue enthusiasts with over 50 sauces, Kansas City and Memphis rubs, as well as barbecue supplies. Our meat counter is 60 feet long with 70 different homemade sausages. Check us out at SobeyMeats.com. That's SobeyMeats.com.
Hey, when's the last time you had a really great root beer float? Brings back memories, doesn't it? Well, over at Schmoe's, we make root beer and black cherry soda just to bring back those memories. We've got six packs to go if you don't have time to hang around for a pint or a float. But bring the kids, grab a free basket of popcorn, and make your own memories with that new generation. Schmoe's Brewery, Grand Rapids, Michigan, located on Patterson, just north of 28th Street.
If your window sticks, slips, squeak, or leak, then it's time to replace them with Anderson Windows from Standale Lumber's Home Center in Standale. Standard and custom sizes along with low-E glass, low-maintenance exteriors, and rich wood interior can turn simple window replacement into serious home improvement. You'll feel increased security, your home will be much quieter and more comfortable, but the increased curb appeal will make you proud of your home and its new facelift from your Anderson Windows and Standale Lumber's Home Center. 4100 Lake Michigan Drive, Standale, or find us on the web at standalelumber.com.
Welcome back. You listen to Grilling Guys on the Grilling Guys Talk Network. It's the Independence Day version of the show. We're glad you got up and put your feet on the floor. Maybe you're out in the backyard firing up your grill right now. I'm Jop. Barbecue Bob is out today, and joining me is Chaz Thompson from Schmoe's Brewery and Bob Schultz from the Culinary Institute here in Grand Rapids. And if you're just tuning in, we covered a little bit of poultry, but I want to wrap that back in right now. Is that Chaz? You talked about how you'd like to do poultry, and you said brine, and then you also said marinade. And I'm going to turn to Chef Schultz and. Can you give us just a breakdown of the differences between those two? Because I think a lot of times people get confused.
Great, absolutely. So a brine is a salt based, and it's great with poultry and pork and some fish, but basically it's a salt and water base with some sort of sugar, depending on the ratio and depending on what kind of protein you're using. I usually do about 25% more sugar than salt in my brines. So if I'm using, for example, a pound of salt, I'm going to use a pound and a quarter of sugar. I'm not saying this is the recipe, but that's an example of getting the ratio correctly with the brine. The marinades are more of an acidic base, kind of with vinegars, some sort of acids like a lemon juice, a lime juice, any sort of juice from any citrus. And those kind of help break down the connective tissues a little bit more versus a brine.
Okay. Now, do you use the two of them in combination, or are you choosing one or the other?
I usually choose one or the other because it's contradicting each other. So I definitely would go one or the other. The brine, you can definitely flavor that brine real well. I love fresh ginger. I love fresh thyme in my brines, especially with poultry, and maybe a drop of two of like a fresh lime just in the brine.
Okay. So, Chaz, you were talking during the break that one of your favorite ways to cook chicken is on a rotisserie, but you brine those chickens before you put them on there. So let's say that you're sitting down. I want to get to the how much of salt and sugar and in your water mix that you do. So you're going to do three chickens. Let's say all three of those will fit on the rotisserie over your grill. You're going to brine them. When you make your brine, help me out, guys. Do I do 3 gallons of water? Do I do a gallon of water? Are we just trying to cover them? What's it look like?
Basically, you're trying to cover them. And okay. I have a bucket. It's a pool chemical bucket that has a nice screw top lid. You can use any container that has a nice lid on it. And you're basically looking to have enough liquid to cover those birds.
Okay.
And I'm going to put those birds down in there in my brine. I'm going to have a little ice in there so I keep it cold. You know, you don't want to get in all warm and weird.
Right.
So keep the cooties out and let it set. I usually go overnight with my brines and just let them go. Now, a lot of people I know, they'll brine in a Ziploc bag and fill that big Ziploc bag up with their chicken parts and brine it just in a bowl in the fridge. Okay. And that's fine. It's just what scale are you cooking at?
Sure. So Bob, if I wanted to do the three chickens and he's got them in the bottom of a 5-gallon bucket, I'm envisioning that maybe they come up a third of the way. So if I put a gallon of water in there, how much salt and how much sugar would I put in that in a gallon of water? I don't mean to put you on the spot.
No, that's okay.
I'm just for perspective so people can get it.
I do about it with a gallon. I'll do a half a cup of salt and maybe just a little bit more, maybe 3/4 of a cup of sugar.
Okay, so it's not taking a bunch.
No, and I kind of mix my sugars too. So it doesn't always have to be brown sugar. Sometimes I squirt a little maple syrup in there, fresh maple Michigan syrup, or Ooh. You can do honey in a combination of the sugar. So if you can also add the liquid sugars in there.
Okay, so interesting. That'd add just yet another profile if you did the maple syrup, because I guess that truly is a natural sugar. So very cool, very cool. Well, now let's switch gears. I want to go over to the beef side. This is where I consider this man grilling. This is where it's at. I really really enjoy beef. Do it a lot of different ways, but let's talk about. Your favorite, Chaz. What piece of beef do you like on the grill the best?
Delmonico steak.
Okay. And why is that?
It's got just beautiful marbling in it. I don't have to really go and fight any kind of gristle or anything. It's all very simple. It's just a beautiful piece of meat. It'll take simple seasonings. You don't have to get exorbitant with it. That fat just melts and makes it happy. And you can do just wonderful things with a fast sear and then just kind of park it off and just let it calm down and get happy and stick it with your thermopen.
Right.
See how you're doing.
Now, Bob, seasoning that Delmonico steak that he's talking about, what's your recommendation on seasoning a really good marbled piece of meat?
Okay. I would be just cautious on the salt in the beginning. Salt retards beef. Salt draws the juices out of the beef if it's too soon. So if you're going to grill a piece of beef, definitely what herbs and spices are good. And then I salt it right at the end, just because sometimes that will draw out the juices, especially on a nice cut of meat like a Delmonico.
Okay. So when are you using a particular kind of salt?
Yes. That's a great question, because if you can think of salt as like crystals, and the finer the crystals, the more it's going to penetrate in the connective tissues. So something flakier, you know, a lot of people use kosher salt, but, you know, there's different things you can use on a steak with salt. I like the salt flakes on some steaks because it just kind of melts right in there. If it's too fine, like an iodized salt, it's just going to really dry it out. So I kind of like a little bit nicer salt. There is smoked salts out there, which are okay. But if you're going to grill, I would be very, very sparingly with something like a smoked salt, for example.
Okay. Now, I've always taught people who ask me to bring that steak up to room temperature or close to it before you put it on the grill. In your opinion, Bob, is that important to do?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, because if it's too cold when you put it on there, it's going to kind of burn on the outside, or not burn, that's a bad word, but it's going to cook a little bit more on the outside versus the inside. So you're going to have a more of a well-done piece, maybe depending on the thickness of the steak on the outside, but in the direct center, it's going to be more raw or rare if it's too cold. So by letting it sit at room temperature, then the heat penetrates through the beef as it's starting to cook.
Do we have to worry about bacteria? I mean, I'm pulling this steak out of the fridge, right? And I'm going to set it on a plate. Maybe there's four of them there because I've got guests coming over or whatever. I've got four steaks sitting on the counter when they arrive. And I've had people comment before. It's like, ooh, I don't know if I want to eat your steak because I'm worried it's going to have bacteria and I'm going to get sick. And frankly, I'm like, well, you know, you can just turn around and leave then. I don't really care because I don't first of all, I'm never going to – anything off my table is never going to make you sick, right? I mean, I'm going to make sure that doesn't happen. But is there anything to worry about? Let's talk about this temperature.
That's a great point. the health department or kind of the general rule of thumb is there's a danger zone between 40 and 140 or 41, between 41 degrees and 139 degrees. But it's a four-hour time. So literally, you mentioned four steaks. Ironically, 4 hours is kind of your limit. When you're having food out, once it's out 4 hours, throw it out. But obviously letting a steak sit for an hour at room temperature is perfectly fine.
Yeah, now we're not recommending that you set this thing out in the sun at the beach.
Exactly.
That's not what we're saying.
No, in the kitchen.
Right. And
sometimes I'll put a piece of saran wrap over it. That keeps those naysayers at bay a little bit.
Right. Exactly. And if there were a fly in the house or something, then it's not getting on the meat. But at the end of the day, to me, that and the temperature that you cook it to are the two keys when you're putting beef on the grill. And Chaz, how do you like your steak?
Oh, I'm medium rare.
Okay. So temperature-wise, Bob, what is that? That's
I always let it carry over cook. I will maybe probe it at somewhere around 115 to 120 and let it sit. And kind of the rule of thumb with, depending on how big your steak is somewhere around 15 minutes for every about pound. So if you have a 8-ounce steak, it's nice to grill it and let it sit so when you cut it, it doesn't bleed all over.
Right.
So it's okay to let that steak rest so then you get the true flavors to keep in the steak.
Yeah, and it stays in the steak in the bite. It doesn't end up all over your plate. So great ideas there. And, you know, I fill this show plan up with things, and we never get to them, but I want to come back. When we come back, I want to talk grilling versus smoking. I just took a brisket off the smoker this morning I had on overnight. I like to do that for the holiday weekend. It's just great. Cut a couple slices of that off for sandwiches throughout the day. So when we come back, we're going to continue on this beef train, maybe a little grilling versus smoking, and then we might dive into a little bit of pork. You're listening to Grilling Guys on the Grilling Guys Talk Network. Stick with us. We'll be back.
Have you missed episodes of The Grilling Guys? Go to thegrillingguys.com and you can play episodes clear back to 2010. Subscribe to the podcast and you'll never miss another one again. That's thegrillingguys.com.
The Grilling Guys are happy to introduce Fenn Valley Vineyards. Fenn Valley Vineyards is the oldest family-owned winery in Michigan, located in the middle of 45 acres of vineyards carpeting the rolling hills near Lake Michigan. Fenn Valley has prided itself in the production of classic European-style wines for the past 22 years. Visit their tasting rooms at the Vineyard Orinsaugatuck, Monday through Saturday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. On Sunday, they're open from 1 to 5. Go to fennvalley.com.
I like my backyard. I like being outside all year long. I work hard. I exercise and live life to the max. Nothing's better than slipping out in my Arctic spa and relaxing with my family. The Spa Boy Advanced Water Care System keeps my water crystal clear, and I control everything from my smartphone, iPad, or laptop. Check out arcticspas.com and find the perfect hot tub for your home. I'm Barbecue Bob.
Have you ever wanted a great craft beer, but alcohol just isn't in the program that day? Well, the beer engineers at Schmoe's Brewing Company have engineered a beer just for you. A pale ale with less than 0.5% of alcohol. Ask for Schmoe's 120, where you dine or drink. It's the non-alcoholic answer with a craft beer taste. Schmoe's Brewing Company, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Beer City, USA.
This is Jop from The Grilling Guys, and I want to talk to you about Garrett's Appliances, which is your one-stop shop for all your barbecue supplies, tools, grills, and smokers in West Michigan. Garrett's has grills for your outdoor kitchen. In fact, we at Home Life Outdoor Kitchens use them exclusively as our supplier for the very best equipment available. That's GarrettsAppliances.com, GarrettsAppliances.com.
Everything I buy these days has got a foreign name.
Welcome Welcome back. You're listening to The Grilling Guys on the Grilling Guys Talk Network. It's the holiday weekend. I hope you're out in your backyard firing up a grill or a smoker, or maybe at the cottage. How about down on the beach, man? Just get it going. Get your grill or your smoker going. And I wanted to finish up this conversation about beef. A lot of people grill their beef, but not a lot of people smoke their beef. I mentioned that I took a brisket off the smoker. Chaz, talk about smoking beef versus grilling it. What kind of cuts of beef do you usually do when you smoke?
I like the ribs. You know, I like something with a little more connective in it and stuff that I'm going to go low and slow and break it down. You know, it's for ribs for me, it's either the crock pot or the smoker.
Right.
And, you know, you can impart some flavor into them with a little marinade and put them out there on the smoker. I'm a big fan of red oak. I mean, you and I talk all the time about the oaks that I take down, and I pick pieces when we're cutting firewood that are going to be smoker wood.
Yeah. In parts, just that's a real northern flavor. You know, you're not on your pecans or your fruit woods or something like that. But the smoke, you know, not a lot of ladies that I cook for like heavy smoke, just a little wisp of it. And that oak isn't too heavy. I mean, it provides just a really nice little smoky flavor.
And it gives just a hair of a bitter bite to it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, and as a beer guy, you know, with my big IPAs and everything,
right?
That little bitter bite is very appealing.
Well, let's talk about that. So those smoked ribs that you do on the smoker, what kind of beer are you going to drink with those?
Well, I'm going to either probably go to a big IPA or a big stout.
Okay.
And a lot of people say no stout in the summer, but I'm not a believer in that.
Right.
I mean, if you like the dark beer has its place paired with the correct food.
Sure. You're a stout guy. So I get it, man. I get it. Bob, I want to talk a little bit about, before we jump into the next protein, is that give a little shout-out to Charlie Jabor, this shish kebab recipe. This is beef. Before I get into the recipe, if I wanted to make shish kebabs, because I enjoy serving food like that, it's on a stick, it goes well in a picnic, you can grab it up and you can, you know, just get a little manly and bite the, slide a piece off that skewer, what kind of cut of beef would you use to put onto a skewer?
Ooh, that's a great question. I mean, tri-tips are good. Anything exactly what Chess said earlier, anything with some marbling. A lot of people that see marbling on their beef, they think it's going to be tough, but fat is flavor.
Right.
So it's got to be something like that on the kebab, and definitely alternating that with some other flavors in there. Obviously, onions and peppers are a staple item on a kebab. But other things you could put on there, even some root vegetables, some light root vegetables like parsnips and rutabagas, kind of add a little bit of uniqueness to that. So that's
I love the taste of a tomato, but I get frustrated every time I put one on there because they pop
exactly
as they're cooking. The little cherry tomatoes, the grape ones are a little tougher, but the cherry tomatoes, they pop, and then there's a mess all over and your plate and the grill. So, but anyway, hey. My shout out to Charlie Jabor, Bob's father-in-law, passed away this week. If you're just tuning in, you didn't hear a little tribute at the beginning, but World War II veteran, one of those great Americans that made our company what it is, our country rather, what it is. And he had a marinade recipe that we used over and over and over. Go to thegrillingguys.com and just put in the search word Charlie, and this will come up. But for this marinade, as Bob said, you want a little bit of acidic in it, and the marinade will break down and make that connective tissue a little easier to chew when you're cooking it. So this one's got wine vinegar, olive oil, lemon juice, thyme, pepper, bay leaves, salt, and then a little bit of garlic. So you can see your aromatics in there with the thyme and the garlic and the bay leaves are adding just a flavor layer in there that maybe other than you know, the simple things that you do with salt and pepper, it is going to give it a little bit of a zing. So check that out on thegrillingguys.com, and you will not be disappointed. And Charlie, we're thinking about you, and Bob, you and your family, we're thinking about you as well. Moving on, let's go down the meat case to the king of all barbecued meats, and that's pork. If you've done anything on the grill, you've done pulled pork, or on the smoker, rather, you've done pulled pork. You do on the grill, you've done pork chops, you've done kielbasas and sausages. All of those things are all pork-based meats. I want to talk a little bit of safety about pork with you, Bob. What do we have to do when we have raw pork product that we're getting ready to cook? Anything, any tips you would have?
One thing that you have to keep in consideration when you're dealing with pork or even poultry is when you marinate it or put it in a brine, it's going to have like a pinkish tint to it naturally, especially with pork. Some of the nitrates are going to come out. So even if you temp it out and it's at 165, 185, it's going to be kind of look medium rare. But it's what happens with especially pork. Those nitrates will come out and give it a little bit of a pink kind of tint to it, and a lot of people get kind of nervous, kind of like with chicken, for example. If you're grilling a piece of chicken and you see this redness around the bone, even though you temped it out, they get really nervous about that. And I respect that and definitely be concerned about it. But if you're marinating and brining something with pork, it's going to have a little bit of pinkness to it, and you can't avoid it. It's going to bring those nitrates out.
Nothing that harms you.
No.
Right. And the nitrates that you are talking about are natural. That's not like injected by a processor. That's a natural part of the meat, correct?
Excellent. Yes. Yep. Excellent point.
Okay. So, Chaz, I fired up the smoker last night, and it's a holiday weekend. I had 4 pork butts on there, and I used a pellet smoker last night. And interestingly enough, pork butts are dense piece of meat. It's actually the front shoulder. It's not the butt, but that's what they're called, is pork butts. Now, I chose the boneless ones, but it was only because I couldn't find the bone-in ones where I was shopping. So I prefer the bone-in only for the reason is it tells me when they're done. That meat retracts back off that bone, and when you get about a half inch of that shoulder blade showing, then it's like, okay, this is really close. It's done. So, you know, smoking is a long period of time, right? So I put the thing on, and I go to bed, and I set my alarm to get up at 2 a.m. to check it, right? And lo and behold, I had 4 butts on a pellet smoker. The 2 that were closest to the firebox were done, and the other 2 weren't. So I pulled them, and then I went back to bed and, of course, missed the second alarm. And I got up this morning, and those other 2 butts were now at 204, and I like to pull them at about 190. So the difference is I let them rest and I pulled them all at the same time. I got real nice, long, stringier pieces of pulled pork the way I like it on the ones that were done at 190. But the ones that I got over 200, it's a little bit mealy. I mean, it broke down. I don't get the nice long strands of meat. It breaks down into much smaller pieces. Is that still edible, that the ones that I overcooked a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. It's edible. But exactly what you said, it is going to be a little bit tougher. I would probably, if I'm going to serve something like with pulled pork, I would compensate that with a little bit of fat, maybe in the pan or a crock pot or in the chafing pan to kind of compensate that and keep it moist. And you could use varieties of different types of fats in there, but it'd be nice to reserve the fat that's already on that
right.
pork butt and keep that in there because that's going to be just great flavor in there.
Yeah. Chaz, any tips on you smoke tons of pork butts? I know you do.
I do a ton of pork butts. This today, I'm doing a whole hog.
Oh, okay.
And for the Yacht Club, it's our annual thing. And, you know, I have that big issue of temperature with a whole hog. Where do you take the temperature? And I use multiple probes to kind of work it out. Now, a trick on a whole hog I'm going to share with everybody is that I put onions around it. I do belly down on a tray. And halfway through, I just pour onions all over this thing.
Whole onions or cut?
Whole. I don't even take the paper off them. Just the whole thing. And then when we're breaking down the pig to serve, what we're going to do is we're going to quick peel them with some gloves on, cut them into quarters, and they've sucked up pork fat. They go first, believe me.
Ooh.
It is a delight, and I even sneak some heads of garlic in there.
Oh, it's with the onions.
With the onions in the pork fat that's running out of the pig. It's awesome.
It's laying right on the smoker.
Yep. When I recoil halfway through my cook, then I put in my onions and they get cooked and they're just melting your mouth. Awesome.
So you're using like a sweet onion, a Vidalia or something like that?
Just Michigan whites.
Wow. Very cool. Coming up next, we might talk a little bit about the do's and don'ts with your meats on the holiday weekend. Make sure that we don't create a problem for the rest of the family. You're listening to Grilling Guys on the Grilling Guys Talk Network. Stick with us. We'll be back.
This is
Barbecue Bob, and I want to tell you about the biggest beer store in West Michigan. Siciliano's Market at 2840 Lake Michigan Drive has the most craft beers I have ever seen in one location. Siciliano's is a family business that works hard to bring you the best beers in the world to the West Michigan market. Visit Siciliano's and check out the huge selection of home brewing supplies as well. That's Siciliano's Market at SicilianoMKT.com.
Hey, you looking for a relaxed spot to come have a beer with a couple of buddies? Swing on over to Schmoe's. 2600 Patterson, that's just north of 28th Street, right by the ice rink. We've got 16 taps, free popcorn, free pool, and free Wi-Fi. There's even outlets underneath the bar if you need to charge your device. So come on over to Schmoe's, have a great beer. Bring the kids, we even have root beer. See you soon at Schmoe's, 2600 Patterson, Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Hi, it's Shasta from Old World Olive Press. We are a Michigan-based company with stores in Rockford, Grand Rapids, Plymouth, and Birmingham. Visit our tasting rooms to sample over 50 varieties of award-winning olive oils and balsamic vinegars, carefully sourced from small-batch artisans in both hemispheres. We have cooking demonstrations and private parties to help you experience the treasures we've discovered. Step into our kitchen, downtown Rockford, and our newest location on Monroe Center, Old World Olive Press. Let us help you bring the magic into your home. Go to oldworldolivepress.com.
We live it, we love it. Alan Bob Sports, sportsman serving sportsmen. It's more than a sport, it's a way of life. Your satisfaction's been our aim since 59, been at the top of our game. We stand behind our name. We live it, we love it. Alan Bob Sports, sportsman serving sportsmen.
With the grilling guys coming at you like a pit bull. We smoke butt, and it's a mitful. Backyard masters, barbecue blasters. Nobody smokes a T-bone faster. So when you see the grilling guy rake, hit the brakes, it's gonna be big. Stick around and put down the rake. Fire up your grill, there's no need to bake. You bring the party, we'll bring the smoke. You're gonna eat so much you might choke. So here's how it goes, and everyone knows. You're gonna listen to the grilling guy show.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Grilling Guys Show. Barbecue Bob is out. I have Chef Schultz from the Sekia Culinary Institute for Education joining me, as well as Chaz Thompson, the baritone of beer from Schmoe's Brewery. Chaz, during the break, you just popped open this Coconut Crusher Toasted Coconut Stout. I don't think summer when I think stout, but I'm liking this one, man.
It's a Caribbean stout.
Is that what it is?
Oh, man. Just think with pork, how it pork's a canvas. You can paint any kind of flavor into it. You know, I watch a lot of pirate stuff. You know, I'm a pirate.
Right.
And they lived on pork because pigs are easy to raise anywhere in the world practically.
Sure.
And we've been talking about how you can season up pork and stuff. You can go a little Caribbean with it. I love a little pineapple, a little brown sugar. I'm a pork.
Yeah, ooh.
Papayas, mangoes would be phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. All those Caribbean things, and then a coconut beer to go with it.
Why not, man? I love it. So, once again, this is the Coconut Crusher from Schmoe's, 6.4% alcohol, borderline session beer. Chaz brought the heavies with him today, buddy.
Well, you know.
I appreciate that.
Go home.
Right. Go big or go home. I want to talk a little bit more about pork with you, Bob, and that is the sausages and brats. We have a lot of local butchers around. You know, I'm preferenced as the Sobeys and the Sobey Meats here in West Michigan. But anywhere you're listening out there, the local butcher usually has some great brats and kielbasas and things this time of year. Got any recommendations on which of those are easier to grill or just grilling them all together? How would you prepare them? Do you boil them first? Do you just grill them off? What are your thoughts?
If you are going to boil them, just a little bit. If I'm doing a large quantity for hundreds of people, then I do, just to be safe, to get the quantity out. Definitely put some beer in that when you're boiling it. Definitely bay leaves, peppercorns, quite a bit of pepper would be great. If not, if you have the time, low and slow on a grill with those. I like that natural smokiness flavor with those brats and on the grill, but quantity I do parboil them just a little bit.
Okay, so if you're just feeding your family out back, you go and you get a pack of 8 or 16 brats. You mentioned low and slow on that. Why?
Because if they cook it too hot, they'll kind of expand and then or get burned on the outside. So then the casein would kind of explode on you. So I just kind of maybe hot in the beginning. I should repeat myself. So maybe hot in the beginning to get a nice sear, nice caramelization, and then turn the grill down. And then longer.
The idea, right, Chaz, is you don't want that casing to pop because you're going to lose all the moisture inside of that tube, which is what makes the flavor. You mentioned, Bob, fat's flavor, right? And it is fat. I mean, it's pork fat is mixed in with the sausages. But if that casing pops, it's going to get dry. And the other thing is I've seen people, rather than using tongs, will use a fork. To roll those
things. What
did
that brat ever do to you? What are you jabbing at it?
Right, yeah, exactly.
Don't hurt that thing. Now, I take a little different twist. I do my boil afterwards, but I boil just in beer. And quite often, I'm dealing with rogue people. They're right. Like herding cats. Then everybody wants to eat at the same time. So I'm manning the grill. I grill them, and then I'll have a foil pan off to the side on the grill with some beer in it, some onions, some bay leaf, and things like that in there. And I'll put those over there, and they kind of finish in there. They're staying hydrated. You never get a dried-out brat. And any excess fat's going to float off them, so you don't get a real greasy on the outside brat. And you impart the flavor back in after you've maybe cooked out some of those juices, because maybe one did explode.
So you're finishing the cook in a liquid. And this is something that you and I talked about before the show, Bob, is there's a technique that I want you to explain to people. Is sous vide? Is that how you pronounce that?
Yes. Sous vide is kind of a unique style of cooking. It's been around for a long, long time. I used this technique when I was in France many years ago, 20 years ago, and basically you're taking usually a protein or a vegetable, but proteins are the best, is you put it in a bag, you add some sort of marinade or flavoring in there. So it could be a lime juice, or it could be onions, could be garlic, and then you take the oxygen out or you shrink wrap it, and then you actually then cook it in a water bath. And these water bath is a consistent temperature. And so whatever temperature you have that water bath at, then that protein never goes above that temperature. So, for example, my chicken, I'll cook in that water bath at like 150, 130, or somewhere around 148 to 150, and then pull it off and then quickly sear it on a hot skillet or a hot grill to get that caramel color on the outside. And I like serving mine, I hate to say it, but I probably undercook some of my chicken for the carryovering process.
Sure.
To then serve it to a guest.
And that carryover process means when you pull it out of the heat, it continues to cook. The temperature continues to go up a little bit. It's just a natural part of the process.
Correct.
Okay, so this sous vide technique, that which is new to me, but why do you do it? What is the advantage of it?
To get a consistent temperature. So let's say it's in a restaurant, like in a restaurant use, is I want a nice medium rare steak. And if you put the steak on a grill and you start to cook it, the outside of that steak is going to be more well done, where the middle might be more rare. So by cooking it at a consistent temperature, like in a water bath, then it will cook it all the way through, and then you can finish it on a skillet or a grill to give it that nice color and flavoring.
So this is you can do this with any protein. I mean, it's just not chicken or fish, but I that just seems odd to me, very frankly, because so you shrink wrap it with the seasonings in it.
You vacuum seal it.
Vacuum seal it, and then you boil it, though. And so you don't boil it because you're controlling the temperature of the water.
Right. To boil is to spoil. So we got to remember that whenever you're cooking, to boil is to spoil. So then the challenge is if you're doing it at home and you have it on a burner, for example, because not a lot of people have this. A sous vide, we have them definitely at the college, and it's kind of like a little pump that circulates the water and heats the water at a consistent temperature.
Okay.
So the water is kind of circulating very, very slowly. But it gets a product exactly the temperature you want, and the flavor, the juiciness of a piece of beef or a piece of chicken or pork, there's no comparison.
Really? Yeah. I'll have to try it. That sounds like a man technique. It's time for a little bit of man law.
Now you're a man! A man, man, man!
In-Laws, brought to you by Vicky's Pasty and Barbecue in downtown Saranac, just on the east side of Grand Rapids. If you've not been there, they do great pasties. And in honor of Bob, you eat them with ketchup. Some of us eat them with gravy, but Bob,
I love my pasties.
Yeah. Oh, they're a little pocket of dough with potatoes and meat inside. They're awesome. But anyway, today's man law, all men must eat meat, and a lot of meat. If not borderline carnivore, for no reason should a man ever be stuck with eating tofu. Some people like it. Not a grilling guy. I've taken some heat for that in the past, but I'm in control. Bob, you're not here, so that's the way this is going to work today.
I agree.
Anyway, yeah. Guys, we've had a lot of fun today, and we've talked a little bit about the sausages, the brats, the smoking, the grilling, the do's and don'ts with pork. I want to talk just briefly about that. Do I bring my pork up to temperature, like room temperature, like we talked about with beef, or not?
If you're going to marinate it, no, I wouldn't worry about it getting exactly to room temperature. If it's a little less, it's okay. The biggest thing is if you're marinating something, don't reuse the marinade and don't oversalt it.
Okay. Those are the two tips.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what you mean by overuse the marinade is don't cook it off as a sauce to serve with the meat, because you put raw product in there. The marinade did its job.
Exactly.
It's done.
Exactly.
Okay. It's done. So, anyway, coming up next, we're going to talk a little bit about seafood and some fish, and see what it's all about when we grill that. Because you know what? A lot of people are afraid of that. I hear that they overcook it a lot. And between Chaz and Bob here, we're gonna give you some tips. You've been listening to Grilling Guys on the Grilling Guys Talk Network. It's going to get fishy in here. Stick with us. We'll be back. Imagine you and your buddies in your backyard drinking a cold one and relaxing in your new outdoor bar or kitchen. Does that sound like a good time? Yeah, baby. Then you wake up and realize you're sitting on an old deck in the glaring sun, drying out your brat on a worn-out grill. This is Jop from the Grilling Guys, and if that's what you're cooking on in your backyard, you should call the guys at Home Life Outdoor Living. They'll help you design and build an outdoor kitchen and entertainment space that will make your backyard the talk of the neighborhood. Create some grill envy in your backyard. Call Home Life Outdoor Living at 616-682-0100.
Fresh, artisanal, and awesome is what I expect with beer and food. At Arcadia's downtown Battle Creek Original Brew Pub, it's authentic wood-fired cuisine and artisanal ales. At Arcadia Brewing Company's new Kalamazoo Riverfront Brewery Pub and Kitchen, it's those same ales and real-deal barbecue. This is Tim Surprise from Arcadia Brewing Company, and as always, please savor the flavor responsibly.
Welcome back. You're listening to Grilling Guys on the Grilling Guys Talk Network. Hey, we want to finish the show today with a little bit of seafood, either grilled or smoked. Chaz, you're on, brother. What is your favorite technique for doing salmon? I know you eat a lot of salmon. You just talked about one on the break. You're gonna bust that out on us?
No, I'm gonna save that for another day.
All right,
I'll make that a post. But anyway, I love doing salmon on the grill, and I leave the skin on when I'm cleaning salmon, just so that I'm have a little bit of that protective layer. Now, opposite of what we said with the chicken, I will go flesh down when I start, and then roll it over. Just to get some sear marks, a little bit of top crust on it, and I'm going to roll it over onto the skin. And what's going to happen is during the course of that, I'm going to be able to put a little bit of a sauce on it. I like put onion, make a little onion aioli, and just put that as a drizzle over the salmon as it's finishing. Anything that might be getting dried out at the top cooks down. Now all that fat between the skin and the flesh is going to melt. And if you're good, you take your spatula and you slide it right in between them and you lift off and you get no skin on the plate. You leave a crispy piece of skin on the grill that you can just fold up and put away.
Wow. And it's clean, it's crisp, it's good. And so, Bob, going to you for seafood. What is your you can cook anything and everything that you have. If you hear seafood on the grill, what's the first thing that comes to the mind?
Any seafood I like. Catfish, I like, as far as shellfish, I love shrimp on the grill. Those are my some of my two favorites.
So let's talk about catfish. That's not really seafood, but that's more lake food. But
correct.
You can catch those.
Absolutely.
I was out with Captain Ken here, and we caught catfish before, brought them in. Wonderful food. How do you prepare catfish?
Catfish, up in the north, we don't eat it very much. Obviously, down south, they eat it more. And I love it. I really do like that. Definitely grilling that, exactly what Chassa was saying. I like leaving it whole. So I'll leave the whole fish whole. Open the cavity in the middle, gut it out, and then inject it with some roasted garlic. Put some garlic right in the cavity, chives, usually some shallots. And
is the skin still on it?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So,
absolutely.
So you've got, in essence, both sides of the fillet and the rib cage is there down to the tail, and you're going to put that on there, and you're going to put these seasonings in the cavity. How do you know when it's done?
So I put actually a neat little trick that you can do with fish is if you tie it with some butcher's twine, and then when you tie it with a butcher's twine, if you put it like on a pineapple rind, we talked about a little Caribbean twist. So if you tie the piece of fish on a piece of pineapple rind and then butcher twine it and then put it on the grill, that kind of perfumates that really well with the pineapple coming through on the grill. And then when you stuff that catfish in there with the different garlic and different herbs, it just really gives a unique flavor.
Man, that's making my mouth water. So you take the rind off the outside of a pineapple, and you're kind of wrapping it around the fish after you've seasoned it, and you're tying it off. So I'm grilling the rind, and it's kind of like steaming the fish on the inside.
Absolutely. So rather than throwing away, keep it. I'll actually dry that pineapple sometimes and throw it in when I smoke. But if you keep that rind and use it as like a bed between a fish and the grill and then tie it with butcher's twine, it actually works pretty good.
Wow. That's like the coolest recipe I've heard this summer.
And with the how to tell it's done, that skin's going to start letting loose.
Right. And the fish meat, the flesh is going to come off the skin.
And when that skin, even in a whole fish, it's going to start letting loose a little bit. And right. You know you're done.
Chef Schultz? Chaz Thompson, thanks, guys, for making time and joining me on The Grilling Guys. We'll be back next week. Barbecue Bob will be back in the chair, and we appreciate you listening, and we'll talk with you next week.